Since we're at that time of year where you say goodbye to the year before and you're saying hello to a new year coming up, a lot of times people take that time to reflect back on the year behind them. But this year, I don't want to do that. I'd rather look forward. So this year, I offer you a prediction for this upcoming year. It's a very simple prediction. So let me just make the prediction and then I'll kind of explain it to you. My prediction is that in this coming year, we're going to see the beginning. And I don't know how much progress it'll make, but I think it'll be just the beginning of seeing people begin to turn against low-level chiropractic, against garbage chiropractic, against things that don't make any sense, and start craving and looking for, seeking out good chiropractic. And so that being the case, it's the most important time of all to be giving good chiropractic so you can be the one they're seeking out. So my reason for saying that is because I've been in practice long enough now that I've seen the cycle happen a few times. So let me tell you a story from before when this happened. It was, I think it was probably the late 90s, maybe early 2000s. And there was this group, and I'm not going to name them because I'm not going to say some very nice things about them. But if anybody was around at that time, I'm sure they will remember them. And there's been many. So there's no way of knowing who I'm actually talking about, I guess. But there was a group who they would brag about seeing a lot of patients, and I mean a lot of patients. They started this thing where it became all about numbers. It was purely about numbers. And so I remember seeing them bragging about seeing hundreds of patients a day. And I think the ultimate pinnacle was when they claimed to have seen 1,000 patients in one day. So you do a little bit of math with that. And let's say now I know that they were working 3 days a week. So on a three-day week, let's say you work three 10-hour days. So in a 10-hour period to see 1,000 patients, you simply have to see 100 patients an hour. So you start doing some math, and it's not hard to figure out that that means you're spending around 30 seconds a patient, a little bit here or there. So how do you see a patient in 30 seconds? That's hardly enough time to say hi. It's certainly not enough time to do much of an assessment, and then you still have the adjustment to do. So the way they did it is they had staff and people would come in and the staff would make sure the patients were escorted to the table, put them on the table, and it was run like a really tight machine. So as you get on the table, you get adjusted, you get off the table, make room for the next person so we can keep doing this for the next 9.5 hours. So basically what you're doing is you're doing the same adjustment on every patient. You already know what you're doing. All extra spinal adjustments are out the window. In fact, for the most part, pelvis adjustments are out the window, thoracic are out the window. For the most part, what ends up happening is you end up focusing on upper cervical, because with upper cervical, you can see a lot of people really fast like that. You lay them down, put them in one position, make one adjustment, get them up, move them on. And so that allowed for these high numbers. And so so they were just seeing astronomical numbers of people. Now you figure if you only charged $1 a visit, which for that kind of a 30-second adjustment, maybe $1 is a fair price, but let's say you only charged $1 per visit, you're still making $1,000 a day, which is in 3 days, you're making $3,000 a week. In 4 weeks, you're making $12,000 a month. That's still almost $150,000 a year. That's still something, and you're only charging $1. Now, in most cases, that's not what they're doing, but let's say you still stay cheap and you only charge $20 a visit. So 20 times 1,000 is $20,000 a day, $60,000 a week, $240,000 a month, and almost $3 million a year. So you can see why people are attracted to this. They said, oh, there's a system by which I could be a millionaire doing chiropractic. I'm in. And all scruples go out the window. They don't even care what's really chiropractic. They don't care about anything. And so these systems suck people in. And so what happened was this group, they did what they did, and they started a seminar business off of it. They wrote books. They did all this stuff and they build. And it was like a meteoric rise followed by a meteoric descent, and it came right back down just as fast until pretty soon. I remember hearing that it was all done and over with and gone. And everybody had broken up and gone their own ways. And that was the end of that. And it's true that they made an astronomical amount of money in a very short period of time. But this is what usually happens when you run a scam, is that you can only run your scam so long until people figure out that it's a scam, and then you basically get run out of town and have to go somewhere else to start over. And I've known many doctors in my life, some I've known personally, who had to move every certain number of years because about the time everybody figured out they were just a scammer, it was time to move to the next city and start all over again and find a new crop of people. And so that is a way of doing business. There's no doubt about it. But I think that we've seen a lot of that in the last few years. We've seen it on social media. We've seen like there's so many different gimmicks. I couldn't even name them all. There's so many different gimmicks out there, and all of them get away from what is truly chiropractic. And so I think that patients, now I have to give them credit, because when they do this, what tends to happen is they bring people into the fold. People kind of go, oh, there's something to this chiropractic thing. But then as they get in, they realize, well, there is something to this chiropractic thing, but what I have is not what it is. I need to find the something that actually works. And that truthfully, that was my story. I knew when I was in school that I had found something in chiropractic, but I also knew I wasn't going to find it at school, that I was going to have to go outside to find somebody who could show it to me. And so then once I found the Gonstead seminars and the Gonstead system, I knew that I had found what I needed to be able to actually go and help people and do it ethically and honestly and make a difference, as opposed to just running some kind of gimmick and having to be a good salesperson. So I think that what we're going to see coming up over this next year is the beginning of a shift where people are going to start to desire that. They're going to start to look for the real, and what really works, what really gets results. Not that long ago, I had a patient who she very much bragged about how she had been seeing chiropractors for 40 years. I've gone to a chiropractor for 40 years. And then we got an X-ray and we looked at her spine and she had degeneration all over the place. And all of those chiropractors told her, oh, just let me adjust you. It's good for your spine. It'll protect your joints, blah, blah, blah. And here she was with totally messed up joints. And finally she made the statement. She said, I went to a chiropractor for 40 years, but what good that did me. And I felt really bad for her because I said, yeah, I will honestly tell you that if you're fixing joints and making them work right, if you've gone to a chiropractor for 40 years and they've done a good job for 40 years, you should have a fairly decent spine. I mean, things happen, accidents happen, there'll be injuries, but it should overall be fairly decent. You shouldn't see multiple levels of injury. And what I didn't have the heart to tell her is that many of the chiropractors she saw over those 40 years, I have no doubt that many of them probably accelerated the degeneration process, because when you give adjustments that violate biomechanics, you're actually doing harm to the joint, not benefit. And so understanding the biomechanics and following the biomechanics is huge. And it's really easy for us to say, yeah, I know it. Yeah, I do it. And then when you actually do it, you don't quite do it. You feel the need to, something in the back of your head says, I got to get this cavitation. So you lock the joint out a little more. Or you do some kind of cheaty move just because you got to convince the patient that you did something worth being paid for. And it's really easy for people to fall into that trap. And the problem with those kind of traps is once you fall into it once, the second time is even easier, and the third time is even easier than that. And you just start this slippery slope where the technique starts to fall apart. And that's why this is my prediction, is because I really see that these things are going to change and people are going to start looking for the real. But that means getting back to doing the real and really focusing on being as precise as possible. In the area of precision, I've been thinking about this a lot. And I'm quickly coming to the point of view that for like a, say a seated cervical, if somebody asked me, what's the most important part of a seated cervical? At this point, I would tell you there's two things. One, your foot placement, and the second is your contact point. Those are two things people just take for granted and they move on. And yet I think that if you don't have your feet placed correctly so that your position with the patient's correct, and if you don't have the right contact point on the vertebra, and I mean precise contact point, it totally changes everything that happens after that point. It makes a completely different adjustment. In some cases, it forces you to do things. In other cases, it doesn't allow you to do things. So those beginning parts, I guess I go back to, I've been thinking a lot about John Wooden and his basketball coaching and how he would tell his players on the very first practice, he would teach them to put on their socks so that they wouldn't get blisters. And it just really got me thinking, we got to get back to basics. We got to get back to some of the fundamental things. And that means not taking anything for granted, because that's where the mistakes happen. When you look at your technique, if you want to know, well, where am I a little sloppy? Where am I not doing it the best? I can tell you where it is. It's anything that you take for granted. when you're trying to do a setup or you're positioning the patient or you're doing anything and you think to yourself, well, it's definitely not that. I've got that part down. That's probably where it's happening. Because as soon as you take things for granted, that's when we lose the focus. And as you lose focus, entropy sets in. And it just starts getting a little bit sloppier and a little bit sloppier and a little bit sloppier. That you have to maintain a high level of focus from the very, very beginning all the way to the very end. And if at any point you take anything for granted, that's when it's going to start to fall apart. So if we're going to have the absolute best technique that we can, and we're going to really try to do what we need to do to drive results, to get these people who are going to start looking for results, that's the big thing, is people are going to stop being so interested in just chiropractic for the sake of chiropractic. I think people are really going to start looking for results. There's a lot of sick people out there with a lot of problems, and they need results. And right now, nobody else is giving them to them. I can't think of any profession that's really on a high level right now, just being able to dole out results. There's really none of them are doing it. And so people are looking for that. And if we step forward and do that, even as a small little sect within chiropractic, if we can do that, there's a platform there because of social media that word can spread like wildfire. And it's really easy to get that out there. So that's my prediction, is that I think that people are going to start looking for it. And we really need to focus on being the absolute best we can be so we can get those people and we can show them what real chiropractic actually is. If I can take a moment just to look back on the last year, there's a conversation that I've had many times, or several times, with several different people. And it was a conversation about the gap between doing the system and doing the system correctly and then getting results. That you can do the system correctly and not see the results you're expecting. And that gap is a huge frustration for both the doctor and the patient. But I think it's that gap a lot of times that causes people to give up on what they're doing in Gonstead, or to get frustrated, or to somehow think that maybe they're lesser within the community, that everybody else is getting results, but I'm not, and I don't know what I'm doing wrong, and now I'm embarrassed to ask. And the reality is, I think there's a lot of people who are doing the system the way the system says, and are not getting the results they expect to get, and aren't really sure why. And that's a gap that I want to bridge. And so actually for this coming up year, it's my intention to try to hit at that many different ways, to try to see if we can have some conversations and some monologues by me, and see if we can try to bridge that gap for anybody who's in that zone, because I don't want you to have to raise your hand and say, me, I'm that person. But at the same time, there is a way to bridge that gap, and we need to give that to you and get that information to you, because there is something that happens where it just doesn't quite get bridged. And so and I know, because there was a phase I went through. I remember going through that and thinking, well, I'm doing everything I was taught to do. Why is this patient not getting better? And ultimately, what I discovered at the end of that phase was realizing that I was trying too hard to think my way through it instead of feeling my way through it. And that I needed to rely less on the x-ray and what I thought was taking place, and more on my hands and what I could feel was taking place. And that's what started to make the shift for me, where I look at an x-ray and I've got ideas of what might be going on. But really, I don't even want to look at it first. I don't really want to look at it till I already know what I'm doing. So I really started relying more on my hands and less on the x-ray. I think that there's a very strong temptation to look at x-ray and to think that it's telling you the whole story. And it's really not. There was when I was in my first year of practice and I wasn't super busy yet, I had every case was a complicated case to me at that point. So I would put them up on my view box and I would draw the lines, and sometimes I'd erase the lines and redraw the lines because I was just sure I had done it wrong. So I'd redraw them and redraw them again. And then I would sit and I would stare at the x-ray, and I'd stare at it for 10 or 15 minutes. And I think, I'm going to keep staring at this until I figure out what's going on with this patient. And that was my approach, which I now think is comical because it was so wrong. It's absolutely not what I should have done. If I could go back in time and meet my former self, I would walk in that room and I would turn off the view box and I would tell myself, feel the patient and tell me what you feel first. That's the key. Once you know what you feel, once you know what the problem is, The x-ray can give you a lot of insight into how to fix it, but it's just so easy to rely on the x-ray thinking it's going to tell us what to fix. And the fact of the matter is, it would be very, very easy if our bodies did not compensate. If there was no compensation and you just saw all this perfect alignment and one vertebra is out of place, no problem. We just put it back in. But because of all the compensation, it throws you off. It misleads you. Just today, I was talking with somebody and I was explaining to him that we had a situation where there was a sacrum that was clearly a base posterior, but the L5 was sitting in posterior inferior. So there was this big anterior wedge between L5 and the sacrum. And so we were discussing how someone else had tried to adjust the L5 to try to close that wedge. And I said, what you have is a base posterior, which is shifting the center of gravity posterior. So the only way that person can continue to stand erect is for the L5 to go into extension, which means posterior inferior. So yes, it's very posterior inferior. However, it's a compensation. It's only there because it has to be for that person to walk. And so the reason for that is that when it comes to the adjustment, my advice was, don't think that you need to set the sacrum forward and then tuck it under to try to close that anterior wedge. That's not the right adjustment. You need to lift it and set it like a base posterior. Lift it I to S and then set it P to A. And when you do that, that L5, if you get it corrected, the L5 does not need to be an extension anymore. It will raise itself back up and you'll see that change. And that's how you can change something like that. There was another patient I got to keep working on this one. I have a goal because we're trying to document it. I have a goal because this person has a straight neck and a curved, like a lateral curve in the lumbar spine. And my goal, my intention, is to correct both of those without ever touching either one. So I'm not going to adjust the lumbars and I'm not going to adjust the cervicals, but I'm going to fix them both because I see what she's got. And I think that if we can document that whole thing and then have before and after x-rays, I think it helps to show that it's not so simple as just pushing on what you think doesn't belong, isn't where it belongs. So to really get results, we've got to get into the realm of finding the subluxation on the patient. That when you start getting in a hurry, when you just feel confused, when you feel overwhelmed, it's so easy to look for a shortcut. And the x-ray usually becomes that shortcut. But the reality is, you got to find it on the patient first. And then once you know what you want to adjust, then look at the x-ray and let it tell you where to go. And so that's just one little tip that I see commonly happening that helps to kind of hurt our best efforts, even though we think we're doing the right thing. But like I said, I'm gonna try to make a major effort to try to bridge this gap. And so we're already lining up some interviews with some people to try to bridge this gap so that we're not just doing, and we're certainly not just adjusting a patient off of an x-ray, but we're finding a subluxation, a real subluxation. We're finding it on the patient. Then we're looking at the x-ray for how to correct it, and we're getting that extra insight so that the x-ray is filling its proper role and not being overly relied on to tell us too much. So hopefully that gives you an idea of where we're going with this. And so I look forward to this year. I think this is going to be a good year, and we're gonna see what other new information we can pump out and throw at you and get some new guests you haven't seen before. So I'm looking forward to this year, and I think it'll be a great one. So we'll see you again soon.